Welcome to Integrate This, your go-to EdTech podcast where curiosity meets classroom innovation. Join your hosts, David Berner and Jeremy Mikla, as we explore the rapidly evolving world of educational technology. From game-changing tools to insightful conversations with today's top EdTech voices, we're here to help educators stay informed, inspired, and ready to innovate. So tune in, level up, and let's integrate this.
Welcome to the Integrate This podcast, along with co-host David Berner. I am Jeremy Mikla, and we're excited to be joined today by special guest Jeff Riley. Jeff is the CEO, co-founder of Day of AI. They've got just a ton of great resources for educators when it comes to AI use, AI literacy, and I know they've got some new initiatives and things that they're kicking off with some intriguing partnerships, I think, as well, too. And Jeff, you know, we want to kind of turn things over to you here as we get started and just kind of get a feel, a sense for kind of like your journey through education and into education technology spaces. You want to kind of describe how you got to where you are?
Absolutely. First, thanks for having me, guys. I do appreciate it. So I did 32 years in public education. I started as a special education teacher, was an adjustment counselor, an assistant principal, a principal, a deputy superintendent, a superintendent, and then my last 6.5 years as commissioner of education in Massachusetts. I thought I was retiring, retiring. And then our friends from MIT called me and they said, hey, do you want to run this nonprofit on AI and education? And I basically, I think they were confused by why I would ask that question. But basically, you know, we didn't regulate social media 15 years ago. And it looks like we've got a lot of mental health challenges with kids because of cell phones, social media, and the like. AI has some real problems, right? I actually think AI is going to be the future of education, but it has to be done safely as well as productively. So as long as they said I could speak safely and make sure the kids know how to use this, then I was in, and they agreed to that. So that's how I got here.
Cool. And can you give us a little bit of background of what you're then doing with Day of AI?
Yeah, so Day of AI is like a fusion of what I would call young MIT technologists and experienced, read old educators like myself. They really know the cutting edge of the technology, and we know how to apply it in schools. And what we really do is three things. I think, you know, we train teachers and administrators, we help people with policy, and then we build AI literacy curriculum for free that people can use.
So you definitely have that background, I think, just describing the various roles that you've had to bring this all together. But it really seems to me like an interesting fusion of the technology and the people that understand the technology along with the pedagogy. And the management to be able to implement it effectively. So how far broad of a reach do you think Day of AI has had in the last couple of years?
Well, we're in over 170 countries. You know, we've trained everywhere from half our team just got back from Dubai the other day. We've trained the teachers in Colombia. But, you know, I like to do most of our work inside the United States, right? And so whether it's us training all the education commissioners in the country twice now through CCSSO, once in Phoenix, and then we did the policy one for them in DC, where it's training all the superintendents in Alabama, all the superintendents in Connecticut. I mean, we're just those are some of the higher level ones for the higher level administrators. But our bread and butter is really working with schools and districts. Like, how does this technology work in a school? Where does the rubber meet the road? How do you think about a policy in the time when, frankly, the technology is moving so quick, your policy could be outdated 6 months from now, that kind of thing.
And that kind of leads in a little bit to so with the continuous evolving of AI and how you have to, even if you develop those guidelines, you've got to continuously be readdressing them and everything. So even though it's called Day of AI, it's much larger than that, right? I mean, it's because I would imagine a lot of your things that you're focused on are going to be sustainable things. I mean, I know with the changes you have to consider, but with your different trainings and things like that, you want to set districts up for success. So can you talk a little bit about what that looks like as a district starts to apply some of the concepts of Day of AI into their district more like medium or long term?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Day of AI was this idea to dip your toe in the water and run one day of AI activities with kids. It's since very quickly morphed into a much deeper kind of how do you infuse this technology into schools. And when we work with schools, we usually work with folks, start with a keynote. And then our team will come in and work with people. We train people both virtually and in person. But the idea, I think, is things are changing quickly. So, for instance, when we people are always asking about, you know, do we do a school committee policy on artificial intelligence, which some people have done. We actually recommend against that. We recommend that schools start with their high school handbook and from a statement of values. We value academic integrity. Great. That's a core value for my district. In that case, the kid has to disclose if they're going to use an AI bot, or the teacher has to disclose if they want them to use an AI bot. And the idea is, because this technology is moving so quickly, let's just begin the process. Hold on loosely, but don't let go, as an old 80s rock band once said, because things are going to change pretty rapidly here.
And when you're looking at when it comes to the things that students need to be aware of as they're approaching different platforms or just AI concepts, what is the first thing that you start with? Because we know that, you know, prompt, like learning how to prompt effectively is important. Being aware of different ethical concerns, environmental components to it, all those different types of things that go into it. Where would you start with students? You know, if you had them in front of you today, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, I think let me do teachers first and then students. When we talk to teachers about it, right, they need to be aware of voice clones, deep fakes, energy consumption, data privacy, bias, plagiarism for the English teachers, right? Hallucinations, where sometimes AI just makes things up. With kids, I think it's fun to start with the idea that AI can often be wrong. And whether you call that hallucinations or something else, right? I mean, I think only about a year ago did they fix the fact at one of the AI programs that Strawberry has three R's in it, but if you used to ask it, it would tell you two or four, right? You may have seen the famous example of how do I keep my cheese on my pizza? And AI will tell you, add an eighth of a cup of glue. And that's probably not particularly helpful, but it's believed that that answer came from either Twitter or Reddit, where someone sarcastically said, add an eighth of a cup of glue. The computer didn't recognize that it was being sarcastic and it presented it as the actual answer. And so teaching kids that this thing can be wrong and what it is and isn't, I think you guys may have seen a lot of news recently about kids having these AI chatbots. Think of them as like AI imaginary friends, you know, goading kids into self-harm. And in some cases, we've seen kids kill themselves. Not recognizing that these actually aren't real people, right? And this is not, you know, this is an algorithmic device, you know, it's a prediction mechanism. And teaching kids what AI is and isn't, I think, is the first step in all that. Now, look, do I think prompting is hugely important? Absolutely. We teach prompting by doing the old peanut butter and jelly exercise. You guys know that from like the elementary grades where you tell the kids to pretend like you're an alien and you have to, I'm an alien, and you have to teach me how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And they say, well, put the peanut butter on the bread, and you take the jar and you slam it on the bread. And they realize very quickly that they have to be very precise in their directions, right? And what we say is that is how you have to operate when you operate with AI. If you want to prompt, you have to be as specific as possible, because the more detailed you can be in your prompting or your questioning, the better information you're going to get back.
And as far as the teachers go, one of the big things that we run into with our even our own trainings is just the lack of time for something that's so important that we need to get teachers' heads wrapped around AI, what it is, what it does, how it can be used effectively, all those different things. Can you talk a little bit about how Day of AI is teacher friendly rather than just like another thing that they've got to attend like any other PD, which sometimes it is looked at like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think teachers would walk over broken glass if they could get something that they could bring back to their classroom. Sometimes, unfortunately, PD is not always that inspiring. What we do is we try to show both be interactive in our professional development, whether it's virtually or in person. But also, I think what we're able to convey to people is this can make your life easier. AI can actually, for a teacher, take away a lot of administrative tasks and burdens to, God forbid, allow you to get back to thinking about building great, exciting lessons. And to give teachers the time and space and to show them some examples of that, like they get into it pretty quickly, right? I was a special education teacher. I told you at the top of the show, Magic School has something, an IEP generator in its suite of services. I used to spend hours writing IEPs, right? This thing can help you build a foundation very quickly. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to kind of completely turn it over to the technology. It wouldn't be an IEP if you did, but you then can take that foundation and shape it using your expertise and to build an IEP document in probably one-tenth the time that it used to be able to take you. I was a middle school principal for a long time. I'm so old, I used to hand schedule my buildings. AI can now schedule your buildings like that, and in big cases of big high schools, save you tens of thousands of dollars. Right? Like there are all these things that AI can do to make educators' lives easier so that you can get back to the business of teaching, which, by the way, is what most people got into this for, right? To build exciting, engaging lessons for kids.
Do you think with AI, and you know, I think about some other past technologies and major leaps forward, right? You know, when broadband becomes first widely available, not even just like internet, but like people can get reliable connections. And we still struggle with that a little bit in some of the rural areas of Minnesota, getting everyone equitably connected. But it almost becomes ubiquitous that everyone needs to be able to connect online. Are we going to reach a point where you think AI is going to be that ubiquitous type of technology that we just will expect that people will be able to have? And then there's a second part to that question. And if we do get to that point, then how do we train people, you know, teachers and students and anyone in our communities to be able to use those tools effectively, safely, responsibly?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think people sometimes are surprised to learn that AI is already here. Every time you try to send a text and it tries to predict your next word, that's AI. Every time you're on Netflix and it curates for you movies you think you'll like, that's AI. We took a Waymo when we were out in Phoenix, Arizona recently, a self-driving car. That's AI. So I do think it is going to become, and in some ways it has become, ubiquitous. Now, when we talk about it for schools, what I believe is this. There's a lot of consternation out there that AI is going to replace people in the workforce, right? And I don't think AI will ever replace teachers. I think the foundation of education is personal relationships. But what I do think is people with AI skills in the future are going to replace those without AI skills. And so that's why it's so critical that our kids learn this in a way so that they can be competitive in a future world economy that we can't even envision at the moment, right? So I think it's not a nice to have or an add-on. It's a must have for kids that mm-hmm. they need to understand. You know, we used to talk about the three R's, reading, writing, arithmetic, I guess. But now I feel like it's the four R's, reading, writing, arithmetic, and artificial intelligence. Because I think kids, it's that important. And so, you know, and you know, the good news, of course, is kids, as you guys have heard, you know, digital natives, they're born into this. We're seen, or I've seen, because I'm older than you guys, as a digital immigrant, right? The first 20 years of my life, there was no internet. My kids like to tease me. They say, hey, tell us again when there was no internet and the phone was attached to the wall and, you know, there was no microwave ovens. How did you eat? And all of that is true, right? I mean, I think the internet for me was called the Encyclopedia Britannica in my family's living room. And in the Riley family, we were missing the S edition. So major knowledge gaps there. But the idea is, yes, that's true, but we figured it out eventually. We're going to figure AI out as well. It'll just take us a little time to get there.
So those skills and then the knowledge sets that you think are necessary kind of leads us into AI literacy. And, you know, like David had mentioned, teachers are asked to do a lot of things within the classroom, right? Is AI literacy just one more thing that teachers need to be embedding into the types of lessons that they have? Or, you know, maybe we should even back up. What do we mean by AI literacy to begin with, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, I think just AI literacy means understanding what AI is and what it's not, how it can help you go further and faster than you ever did before, but also recognizing its problems and limitations, like understanding underneath the hood what's actually happening. We've seen a lot of kids, you know, involved with self-injurious behavior because of AI companions and things like that. Like, I think if kids understood that this is a prediction algorithm device and the mechanics behind it, we'd be able to cut down on a lot of that stuff, and they could actually be productive users of the tool. To back it up even further, like the PISA international test in 2029 is going to make AI literacy a discrete exam for the first time because they recognize its import. Now, does it mean that you have to add another class in AI literacy, or can you do it in your regular class? I think that's open to debate. What I tell teachers who are concerned about it is, you know, yes, we have free AI literacy curriculum that you can use, certainly, but you can take your already great lessons and infuse AI into those lessons. So you don't have to throw out the baby with the bathwater. And the idea is we don't have to know the final destination here. You just have to start. I show a slide when I speak about this publicly, and it's three tidal waves. And in the first tidal wave, the guy's trying to hold back the tide. And in the second tidal wave, he's buried his head in the sand. And in the third tidal wave, he's surfing the wave. And I said, you don't even have to know how to surf, but you do have to dip your toe in the water here and just start, right? And then you try to show them different examples of how this can make their life easier and how this could be embedded in a lesson you're currently doing to make it even more exciting. And so, you know, I think teachers recognize that things have changed and the demands put on them post-COVID even, you know, there's a lot of issues going on. They got into this to teach. And if they could find ways that can help them get back to a place where they can teach and be excited about their jobs, I'm going to be in for that. And so that's the exciting part of this.
Yeah, and I really think, and I'm in complete agreement with you that, you know, it starts with having that relationship with that student that, you know, no AI is ever going to be able to take the place of the teacher with, right? And then I think it comes down to from there to really enhance that student's learning is to start with the goal in mind. What is it that you're trying to achieve? What do you need your students to learn? And then can AI play a role in helping to either accommodate that for students or to accelerate that learning for students? And I think if they start to think of AI as being that partner or that teammate in that journey, I think it just makes it a lot easier for teachers to be able to connect that, knowing that I think they're coming from that place that the things that got them into teaching in the first place, like you said, are still ever present.
Right. I mean, I'll just give you one example that we show to teachers. We had, you know, engineering standards in eighth grade in Massachusetts, for instance. And so we would talk about a big dig construction project, and you have a class of 30 students and you're trying to do an activity, you know, an engineering activity with kids. But you've got one kid that reads at a second grade level, another kid that reads at a college level, and most of the kids are, you know, reading at the middle schoolish type level. Well, if you don't differentiate your instruction, you're going to lose the kid at the second grade level and you're going to lose the kid at the college level, right? The second grade level reader is not going to be able to keep up and understand. The 12th grader is going to be bored. Now, for the first time, you can kind of beam an article, a summary on this engineering big dig lesson at written at a second grade level to the one kid, beam another article, same summary, but written at a 12th grade level to another kid. The rest of the kids get their grade level ones and they can all do the activity together. And so you've kept the entire class engaged. Whereas, you know, before we always said we could differentiate instruction, but as you guys know, that's very hard to do and problematic. This is the first time a technology is going to allow us to differentiate and personalize instruction that I've ever seen. And that's why I think it's different than, you know, it used to be technology was going to be the silver bullet. If every kid had broadband, if every kid had an iPad, suddenly everything would be fixed. That didn't get to the core of instruction. This technology can get to the core of instruction and help people change their practice for the better.
And if you're looking at with the student use side of things and just for responsible use, one of the things that is, you know, becomes an issue in the use of AI, and I always argue it's for everybody. It's not just related to students, but the ability to keep your own voice in the use of AI. So can you talk a little bit about methods for keeping your voice and using AI more as a thinking partner, as opposed to like what everything started off as and what teachers were really worried about, which was they're using it to write their whole papers and not doing any sort of work whatsoever. Can you talk about any methods for keeping student voice in assignments, assessments, all of that?
Yeah, so I would say a couple of things, right? There, one of the biggest dangers that we as an education sector need to grapple with is the idea that this technology is a tool that can help us go further faster, but only if we already have a knowledge base, only if we already know how to think critically. And so the danger here is that a kid could write his paper with ChatGPT, to your point, you know, just cheating basically. And then the teacher could use Brisk, another AI program, to grade the paper, and everybody goes to the beach, right? And so everyone's cognitively offloaded their brains, which are now atrophying at the beach, even though it's a nice sunny day, right? And so we actually wind up getting dumber or become drones. That's particularly dangerous, particularly when we know that AI sometimes gives out bad information. And so how do we make sure that our kids have a knowledge base to begin with, but then are going further, faster? I know that a lot of people like to use the analogy of a calculator for AI. And, you know, back in the day, people thought, oh, kids won't be able to do math with a calculator. But actually, it turns out kids could do deeper math with a graphing calculator. I think a better example might be the moving walkway in an airport, right? If you're, you can stand on that moving walkway and get faster to where you need to be. But if you're actually walking on that moving walkway, it's almost like you're running because you're going very fast. And what we need to make sure is that the kids are always walking and flexing their brain muscles. And to do that in class means, you know, it could take several forms, right? I know the English teachers all over America are up in arms about ChatGPT. I get it. Totally valid. I would gently push back and say, it's not like we haven't seen this before. I remember they had these things called Cliff Notes back in the day, which was the analog version of ChatGPT cheating, right? Like, we figured this out before. We can figure this out now. Whether it's blue books or restructuring how you teach, we'll be able to get around it. But the bigger point is, how do we make sure that our kids' brains are being flexed? How do we make sure that kids can prove they have a knowledge base? One of the things I've written recently is this idea that this is an incredibly powerful technology, and we need to have kids prove to us that they're ready to use it. And so I have two kids, they're in their 20s now, but when they were 16 and ready to drive, I didn't just throw them the car keys. They had to go to driver's education class, and then I had to be in the front seat white knuckling with them as they learned to drive before they took the test. AI is an even more powerful technology, I would argue. And I think our kids need to prove to us that they know what AI is and what it's not, and have that AI literacy. And at the same time, prove that they have a knowledge base so that they can actually utilize AI even better. And I'll give you one more example. I have ChatGPT on my phone, and I fight with it every day. At least once a day. I probably use it 10 times a day. I probably fight with it once or twice a day because I know what it's telling me is incorrect. But if you didn't have a knowledge base to know that, you just blindly accept what it tells you, right? So it does. You can't go that far if you're just taking this in verbatim and accepting it as gospel. You have to have your own understanding of what's happening.
And as you work with districts and as you talk with your team, and what are you seeing that districts that have started to implement AI or have engaged in trainings, what are you seeing that they're getting right? And then maybe even what are they struggling with? I know you already just mentioned a few things there, but is there anything else? What are they getting right? And then what are they still struggling with?
I think what they're getting right is when they're having open and honest conversations with kids. And as a corollary to that, I think some teachers are starting to change what their instruction looks like a little bit, so that it's not just kind of a call and response thing that could be easily obtained from Gemini or Grok or whatever bot you're using. And I think they've started to think about how I can engage kids in a different way. I think the best thing that districts are getting right is they're starting with the tools for teachers that can make their lives easier and let them get back to using that time and space during their very busy lives to focus on building better pedagogy and curriculum materials for kids, right? People got into teaching to inspire children. They didn't get into it to do lunch duty. They didn't get into it to you know, necessarily write IEPs, although those are important. The earlier example I gave you about scheduling my building, I mean, that took a lot of time, right? Like, you'd rather be out there working with kids and doing things that you think are more important. So the fact that the school districts that are really moving on this are doing two things. They are figuring out how they can use these tools to make their lives easier so they can go back to really focusing on instruction. And then the next thing they're doing, they're sharing exemplars of what they're doing in class. I used Gemini this way. I use Brisk this way, right? I use Timely to schedule my classes this way. And when people start having those conversations, then, you know, that's where the power comes from, when teachers sharing best practices with each other. You're making me geek out on this. I'm so sorry.
One of the things too is that we already started working from the opposite direction. Like, students got a hold of it, teachers found out students were using it, now teachers are using it, when really we should have started with districts understanding it so that that could trickle down the opposite way. But what if a district is going to build a roadmap and set some things in place for their guidelines, what's the first step or steps that you feel they need to take to do that so that it's very clear to the teachers and students?
Where I've seen the best success is when districts bring in like their entire community. And what I mean by that is, I don't mean the entire community, but I mean representatives from parents, teachers, school committee members, students, right? Who are involved in the functioning of the school. So everyone has a voice. And when you can bring people together, I think you get a sense of that everyone has a stake in this. And this is the first time, as a side note, where parents are going to have to be deeply involved in what their kids are doing with technology. I think we've learned some kind of lesson with our lack of understanding of social media, but schools and parents are going to have to be on the same page when it comes to what AI is, what it isn't, and how you can use it. But when I've seen districts really do well, it's when they've brought people together to talk about this. And to try things out. Don't be afraid to pilot things in the beginning. And when you call something a pilot, it means it can stop and you can change course, right? And start slowly, right? I said start with a student handbook at the high school level. Don't start with a school committee policy. School committee policies typically last 10 or 20 years. This is not that kind of thing right now. It's just not.
So one of the groups that you mentioned there, I found very intriguing. I want to turn the conversation that way a little bit, and that's parents and families. And I know recently it was announced as a partnership between Day of AI and Common Sense Media, working together to create an AI literacy toolkit specifically targeted towards parents and families. Can you spend a little time talking about that?
Yeah, so Common Sense Media is a pretty well-known group that, you know, seeks to keep kids safe in this new age of technology, even long before AI was on the scene. And we partner with them because we recognize pretty early on that there's this gulf between what kids are doing and what parents think they're doing. And Common Sense Media actually did a study recently where they showed, I think it was 70%+ of kids are using an AI companion or its equivalent, but only 30% of parents know that their kids are using any kind of AI whatsoever. So there's a real gulf in what's happening and what parents think there's happening. That's not parents' fault. They just don't really have visibility into what their kids are doing on their cell phones all the time or on their laptops. But we think you've got to, you know, cross that divide. And so we created videos and toolkits to help parents kind of explain what AI is so they have an understanding, but then just to begin the conversation with their kids about limits and boundaries. I think the best thing you can do if you're a parent is to actually engage with your kid and say, hey, I'm looking at this and trying to figure it out myself. Because sometimes if kids think they're, you know, running wild and running free, that's not a good recipe. But if they know that their parents are looking over their shoulder in a metaphorical sense, then I think you're going to have a better result overall. And kids ultimately will appreciate that.
So do you have any examples of like the types of conversation starters that could
if you go to our website, you can see all of it. But I like the videos we created where, you know, we actually lay out some things, stop, give parents some guidance questions to use with their kids. We start the video back up. We do it again. And so it's very interactive. And sometimes schools have used these at parent nights and things like that. So there's a wealth of resources for parents to kind of, you know, get behind the curtain here and see everything. Because, look, not all parents have a computer science degree, right? Most parents, you know, they're working all day and they need something that they can access that makes sense to them. And we try to make, you know, it pretty simplified, understandable so that they can have coherent conversations with their kids, which we think is just critical in this day and age.
And I think it's kind of a neat opportunity as well, where, you know, like you had said, the parents aren't all going to be experts in computer science. And I tell you what, neither are the kids.
Correct.
Even though you talked about, you know, digital natives and immigrants, but, you know, there's even kids out there that are still, you know, not naturally inclined to pick up technology. But it, no matter what, I think it does bring an opportunity to discuss different ways in which you're using AI, whether for the student it's in their classroom or whether, you know, as a parent, like, hey, we've had the same routine for dinners every night, over and over. It's just the cycle that repeats. But now, hey, what if I give AI the opportunity to give me some ideas to jazz up the types of dinners that we have, right? And then, and I think then it, in both cases, they're modeling for each other ways that AI can effectively be used. And they might spark ideas for different directions they could go with them in their own circles.
I think that's absolutely right. I think anytime you can give parents resources to help support them. I mean, parents don't have to be computer science experts, but they're experts in the most important thing, being a parent. So they have the will and the desire to make sure that their kids are safe. And so just providing this information, giving them those opportunities and ideas to how to connect with their kids, how to connect with their school, to make sure that everybody's on the same page is going to be incredibly helpful.
Yeah, and I think another key thing that you brought up too that I would encourage, I think any administrator when they have their parent nights or their open houses is, you know, what a great opportunity to do some sort of a family AI event surrounding that. And I know you brought up resources and stuff on the website, and I think David and I will definitely link those in the descriptions that we have. And in the show notes that where they can go and they can find out more information about how to get some of that started.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. And I think, you know, parents should be okay saying to their kid, you know, hey, what do you know about AI? Can you teach me something about AI? I think about a few years back when my son, who's more of a techie than I am, was talking about the Boston Celtics when they were in the finals for the NBA. And I said, well, you know, I don't think artificial intelligence is allowed to tell you who's going to win the NBA finals. And so I don't know if it was Chat or Gemini, whatever we used, it was like, who's going to win the NBA finals? And, you know, we cannot offer that information. We're not that came back from the, and then my son said, well, watch this just for fun. Who's going to win the NBA finals? And it was Celtics in seven. So kids understand how to get around this too. Right. So let them share some of their expertise with parents, and that could be a fun way to get the conversation started as well.
And could you talk a little bit about PD approaches that you take, it sounds like it's actually been kind of weaved through all the conversation topics that we've had so far. It seems like a lot of what you find important is just trial and error, like having opportunities to try things, whether no matter who you are, if you're a parent or a student or whoever, there should just be opportunities to try these things to increase understanding. Is that accurate to say?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we look at different lenses for demonstrating to teachers how this can be done, right? You can give every teacher a bag of M&Ms and have them make predictions. Hey, does M&Ms put the same amount of colors in every bag? Is there one color that's more prevalent than another color? What does ChatGPT say? And then you get the information from ChatGPT and compare that to the data that you have with the teachers you're teaching that day, right? We talked about the peanut butter and jelly lesson. There are different tasks or activities you can do with teachers to show them how to infuse AI into their lessons. You want to teach about the Sistine Chapel? Well, one of the things to know about the Sistine Chapel is Michelangelo was a bit of a rebel and used to insert self-portraits into parts of the Sistine Chapel. So you do an arts Sistine Chapel activity. You have ChatGPT via DALL-E do a self-portrait of you, and then you freehand draw your own self-portrait and do a comparison of those two things. Like, there's just 1,000 ways to start bringing this into everyday lessons that you do. And, you know, I think teachers appreciate that. I think we've spent a lot of time over the last 30 years talking about systems and structures, test scores and accountability. All those things were important. That was a structure we didn't have before, we needed to create. But I think teachers appreciate the idea of we're going to get back to teaching. And the fact that we could use AI to make my life easier and to spruce up some of my lessons is pretty fun and engaging.
And this is the last question before our lightning round. But
the lightning round.
Yeah, the lightning round is going to be good. But one more question before that is for everybody to increase their knowledge around AI. AI literacy is always brought up, and creating understanding around these systems, how they work, how you should use them. If you're looking at a school district, or let's say it's one that you just worked with, what does success look like with that? Let's, you know, if you walk away from a training that you just did, what is going to leave you feeling good about that? You know, what does that school have to know, or those teachers or students have to know about all the AI literacy topics for you to feel good about your training?
So I could probably spend 5 hours answering this question, but I think the shorter answer is they will take what they learn in the training and start applying it in their classrooms, in their lessons. And it doesn't have to be every day, all the time, but they're open to this idea. They're trying things out and they're sharing what they're doing with their peers in the school. And that's what looks like success for me. I think we're at the first inning of this 9-inning ball game. And I think it's going to be important more so to get people to start and to recognize that things will get better over time. As I told you guys, I'm so old. I remember when the internet first came, and I think it was in my 20s, and it started as dial-up with AOL, and it was very slow and clunky, and it got better, significantly better over time. I think AI is going to be the same. It's clunky. It makes mistakes. In classrooms, we're going to have to try some things out, but we're going to get better over time if we continue to kind of workshop this stuff and share it with each other.
Yeah, and I think that's essential. I think the most, like I would agree with what you said. When I've gone out and I've done trainings recently with groups about AI, and I give them a chance to try something, and then it's all these elbows of teachers. Hey, look what I just did. Look what I was just able to make. Look at how this could really affect what I'm doing. And I think that's the thing that really kind of then feeds the others to like, oh, I want to try it. And then they're going to think of a way to adapt and adjust and find an even more creative, effective way to make it work.
Well, you guys know as trainers, I think, you know, one sign that things are going well with your training is they want your slides and they want to steal your activities and materials. Those are, you know, those are two signs that like, oh, they want to bring this back to their school.
Well, to Day of AI's credit, there has been many things that I have liberated from some of the webinars and the presentations that I've seen as well, too. So I think it Great. all it all is to the benefit of everyone to be able to share it, to share that out as widely as possible.
Well, it's all free. All you have to do is go on our website, and I think you just plug in your email address, and we don't spam people, but takes you behind the curtain. There's a lot of free materials for people.
Awesome. Well, okay, we're moving into kind of that last part here of the conversation where we get to find out a little bit more about Jeff and what makes him tick a little bit here. And so we have six questions that are part of our lightning round here for today. And there's, you know, you can feel free to just give short little quick blurbs, or if it's something that really is one of those passion points for you, you want to elaborate, you can do that too. It's entirely up to you. But one that we ask every time of every guest is, what's your walk-up song? What track motivates you and keeps you going?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Shipping Up to Boston from the Dropkick Murphys. Nice. I live in Boston. My name's Riley. I'm obviously very Irish, and that's got resonance with me for a variety of reasons.
Perfect. It's a good one. It's a good one. Next one is to start your or to power up your day, coffee, tea, or something else?
Coca-Cola Classic, my friend, and not the new Coke that they introduced 20 years ago that they discontinued, the old high test.
All right.
Perfect. You know, in all of the different roles that you've had, you know, from special ed teacher, building administrator, superintendent, commissioner of education, what's one leadership lesson that you keep coming back to?
Well, I think it's what I spoke about earlier, where I know that people think this technology is going to replace humans, but I believe everything in education is about personal relationships. Kids have amazing BS detectors. They know if you care about them or not. And that doesn't mean you have to be their best friend. Caring about them, it means teaching them, and they understand intuitively whether you're a teacher or not. So I think that would be, if I'm talking to new teachers, that's my number one lesson, is do your job, do it well. Kids are always watching.
What's one tech trend that educators should stop obsessing over?
Plagiarism, please. I listen, you guys probably have seen this, and I understand English department heads and teachers are upset, but we've been through this stuff before. We can figure this out. AI is so much more than just plagiarism. Is it a valid concern? It absolutely is, and we have to figure out, you know, how to address it. But I would also ask people to be open to what AI can do in the positive, and not just always focus on the negative.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because we just had a guest on in another show that will be released right before this one, who called that same thing dueling AIs, where you have academic integrity and artificial intelligence. And do they have to be in a constant conflict with each other, and how can we make it so that they're mutually heading the same directions? Right. So that's, yeah, I think you're right on track with that. How about like a hobby or an activity that you do that just kind of helps keep you grounded when you don't need to deal with the pressures of the AI world?
I'm not sure I have a lot of hobbies or activities. I would say I enjoyed always watching my kids' sports. I have one daughter still in college, and she plays softball. So I go off to Rhode Island where she's in school and go to watch her on weekends to play softball.
All right. Which fictional robot or AI character would you trust to run a school for a week?
I would say Data from Star Trek Next Generation. Although I can't remember the robot's name that used to say, "Danger, Will Robinson." What was that one? That would be funny.
Oh, I've seen that Netflix.
That may be before your time, kids.
Yeah. What was the name of that one? Yeah. Awesome. Well, Jeff, we really appreciated having you on the show. I think we've shared a lot of great insights, you know, but I know that you have things that are coming up and things that are going on with Day of AI. So before we let you go, what would you like to promote? What would you like to say? And we'll make sure to link anything in the description as well.
Yeah. So this year we're kind of on our Day of AI USA tour, where we're doing kind of virtual trainings for free for people. And we're also going at different places around the country to train in person as well. That culminates next July, this coming July, with the 250th anniversary of the country, back here in Boston, where we're going to have kids showing leadership on all things AI. And so they're going to create solves for how to use AI to make a better world. They're going to show us how to use AI in the arts. But the one I'm most excited about, I think, is we are having two kids from every state are going to be flown in to serve as student senators. They're going to go to the Edward M. Kennedy Institute, which is an exact replica of the U.S. Senate, and create a national student AI policy. And they're going to do that long before we grownups have a national AI policy. So I think leaning on student leadership is going to be important.
That sounds like a great experience. And if people want to reach out for more information from you or from Day of AI, is it best to go to the website, or do you have like an email or a LinkedIn or anything?
People can always reach me at jeff@dayofai.org, but I would recommend people go to the website, sign up, and then get behind the curtain and see all the stuff we have going on.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate the time.
Thanks for listening to Integrate This. Want to take your learning further? Head over to our YouTube channel for quick tutorials, deep dives, and more EdTech tips you can use right away. Don't forget to subscribe and catch new podcast episodes every Thursday on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, keep exploring, keep innovating, and keep integrating this.